The French top flight has made for some sensational headlines this summer, from Kylian Mbappé snubbing Real Madrid to Saint-Étienne supporters attacking their own players after being relegated. And today I'm joined by Michael Lahoud and Jonathan Johnson to pick over some of the biggest talking points from Ligue 1 as preseason beckons for the League of Talents. Diego Lasso begins right now. Today's Diego Lasso episode is presented by Gillette Clear Gel Antiperspirant. For those who don't like to sweat, the choice is clear. Gillette is your ticket to all-day freshness. Gillette, the best a man can get. The choice is clear, presented by Gillette Clear Gel. Welcome, everybody. Diego Lasso. We have Jonathan Johnson and Michael Lahoud as we discuss Liga, specifically PSG, as they're closing in after the, you know, supposed reported impending, pending exit of Mauricio Pochettino. Now there is the decision of the new manager, and it's between Christophe Galtier, who seems to be the one that's coming in, over Zinedine Zidane, who was going to be the popular choice. So I have here Michael Lahoud and Jonathan Johnson as we discuss, is this choice the clear one? Jonathan Johnson, let's begin with you. Christophe Galtier, we know what he's done in the French top flight and, of course, his experience in that division. What do you make of, what's the latest, and what would you say in terms of Christophe Galtier over Zinedine Zidane?
Hey there, guys. Great to be back on with you. Yeah, it's an interesting one. And dare I say it, you know, if PSG managed to get this deal over the line, it's a smart move, you know, first of, you know, hopefully many this summer in terms of PSG turning things around after a stagnant couple of years of their project. And I guess there's different ways that you can look at it, pros and cons. Pros: Christophe Galtier knows Ligue 1 like the back of his hand. Three-time best manager in Ligue 1 winner. He's also won the Ligue 1 title against, you know, Qatari-owned PSG with Lille, also won the Coupe de la Ligue when he was with Saint-Etienne, and has basically made a success of some very difficult situations, both with Saint-Etienne and then with Lille. And, you know, I would argue as well that he actually did pretty well in his first season with Nice as well. Some people would beg to differ, you know, but I think there is that argument that Galtier is somebody who was definitely more of a sure bet domestically, but then there are question marks over his Champions League record, and you absolutely cannot question Zinedine Zidane's Champions League record, given everything that he's achieved with Real Madrid. So I think it comes down to the simple question of, you know, which one of those two guys wanted the PSG position more. And we know that Zinedine Zidane's priority for a while now has been the French national team. And given that we've got the World Cup coming up at the end of the year, Didier Deschamps looks to be, I'm not going to say on borrowed time, but he looks to be approaching the end of his, you know, natural cycle with Les Bleus. It doesn't make any sense for Zinedine Zidane to commit to something which really is going to require at least 3 years, you know, if in 6 months' time his dream job might become available. So I think to an extent it was a non-starter, but also at the back of Zinedine Zidane's mind is perhaps, you know, are there any other clubs out there who I would like to join, who are kind of primed for Champions League success, that I can step in and basically get them over the line? So I can understand why there might have been a temptation from Zidane. You know, obviously there's a lot of emotion connected to the fact that he comes from Marseille but never played for and has never coached the club. But at the end of the day, I think that Galtier is the smarter choice, especially when PSG have just brought in Luis Campos to basically shape the sporting project. Campos and Galtier worked together in Lille, and obviously Campos has a phenomenal reputation given everything he achieved in Ligue 1 with Monaco and then Lille. So very, very interesting toss-up between the two, but I think ultimately Galtier will be the more pragmatic choice for PSG.
Well, I just want to start off by saying bonjour. Been practicing Duolingo, my French. We're doing Ligue 1. So
well done. JJ, the easiest word. Well done, Mike.
Yeah. I'm going to put it to the test when Mike comes and visits.
In October. Yeah, I know, man. Bonjour and baguette. That's as far as I got. I failed my first couple tests, but I won't fail this one. And here's why. It depends on this PSG just desire to conquer Europe in the Champions League. They need to put that to rest and go with a more pragmatic coach, as you said. And here's why. Look, it ain't working. You keep going after all these names. You keep going after, you know, just shoot for the stars. You land on the moon. But football is a team sport, and it starts at the top. You need to have someone who knows the league. You need to have someone who can get the best out of players that also has a relationship with the sporting director. I think because they have a prior relationship, that is going to bode well for PSG in the longer term. And you've committed to Kylian Mbappe. There's a revolution happening inside that locker room, and you need to have a bit of calm and a bit of connection between the manager and the sporting director. And I think that's the key thing in this relationship that makes Gauthier probably the better choice. And what you said about Cizou, I just don't see it. It'd be really odd to see him in the PSG dugout, especially because Zizou, Madrid, that's just a marriage that my mind can't take it. I feel like I'll have to fill my coffee up with something else other than coffee, just not the regular stuff, the stronger stuff that we can't talk about on this show.
Well, you can. We've done it in the past, so don't worry about that. But the choice is clear per PSG, of course, as Christophe Galtier seems the favorite to take over. We will see if he indeed, because of his French experience in the top flight and, of course, with the clubs that JJ mentioned, can PSG finally not just dominate Ligue 1, but the Champions League. We will have to wait and see. Moving on, let's talk about Neymar Jr. at PSG. Jonathan Johnson, the Brazilian, feeling very happy with the national team. Obviously, when it comes to his club football, things were good from a Ligue 1 perspective. PSG reclaimed that trophy, but Champions League, once again, they couldn't get it done. It's going to be an interesting few months for Neymar Jr. as he gets ready for a new season before even the Qatari World Cup. But what's the latest in terms of what's going on with him? Obviously, with Lionel Messi there, still Kylian Mbappe staying, et cetera, et cetera, and a new manager coming in. What's going on with Neymar and his future, his fate with Paris Saint-Germain?
Yeah, it's really good timing on this topic, given that Nasser Al-Khelaifi did the rounds with some exclusive interviews less than 24 hours ago, discussed basically the state of play with PSG, and was asked when he was doing his Spanish interviews that whether Neymar might be on the move or whether there's no longer any room in the project for him. And Al-Khelaifi was, I wouldn't say reassuring, if you're Neymar. Because basically, without sort of singling him out, basically said that the sort of indulgences of the PSG superstars, the glitter era, is over. PSG want to go for something more functional and be more of a team, as opposed to having just a collection of stars sort of in their comfort zone, which, kind of familiar. Let's not forget that it's not the first time that Al-Khelaifi has had to come out and speak publicly about Neymar and his potential future in the French capital. It happened before, back in 2019. A raft of changes were made. PSG actually went on and enjoyed their strongest performance in the Champions League, got to the final and then got to another semi-final before it all sort of fell away under Mauricio Pochettino. And I think the key issue with Neymar, being realistic, after he's signed his latest contract, who is going to stump up the money to come in and sign him? Even if PSG take a cut in the money that they might be expecting to bring in, that contract is enormous, plus a transfer fee. It whittles the list down to a very finite number of clubs. And I'd argue, we've talked about this on the podcast a month or so ago, that somebody like a Newcastle United is probably the most realistic destination. And it doesn't seem like they'd be willing to take a risk on somebody who I don't think would adapt particularly well to Premier League football and certainly would find cultural issues in England, something that, might stop him from bedding in. So obviously he's much more comfortable in Paris than he was in the first couple of years of his time with PSG. But I don't think it's unreasonable for PSG to expect him to knuckle down. And I said this when the contract extension of Mbappe was confirmed. I think it's a good thing that there's a player within the PSG squad who wants to hold PSG to higher sporting standards. And if that results in Neymar being unable to be moved on and then having to get down and work hard on the pitch, I actually think that's a bonus for PSG.
There's a song that I think of when I think of Neymar's time at PSG. You guys like Boys to Men?
End of
the road.
Although we've got to the end of the... Is that
Whoa,
good?
LME. You might be a PSG locker room Grammy Award winner.
That doesn't say much, I think.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, where's your Boys to Men parallel here? What are you bringing? One of the greatest R&B boy groups ever. What's going on?
It's the end of the road, baby.
Oh, it's the end of the road.
I think if not this year, Then
but
sure.
Who can afford his contract, Mike LeHoud? Hey,
you know what? There's a lot of money in the Middle East. Neymar is a commodity. He's not just a football player. He is just an entertaining, just sporting commodity. I think that he will follow the money, continue to follow the money. And the fact that they committed to Mbappe in such larger-than-life proportions, there's a lot of question marks if you're a player in that PSG locker room that go through your head. And if you're Neymar, you were the guy that they committed to first before Mbappe came along. So I would imagine the Neymar camp would be a little bit rattled, asking questions of their own. And when you look at the sporting decisions being made, I think PSG are going to go towards younger players. The Hollywood atmosphere, the Hollywood just aura of this team, I think is going to go out the window. The standards are being raised, and I think they're going to go after Ligue 1 players who are young, who are hungry, and that puts pressure on superstars like Neymar. The years of yesteryears of vacations, of play sometimes, playing certain games, dictate things to the staff. I think they're coming to an end, and if I'm Neymar in his camp, I would definitely be looking to try and move the project elsewhere. For him, I don't have a good feeling for him in terms of being in a PSG Jordan shorts for much longer.
No, I mean, I think that's fair enough. And I do see a strong argument towards finishing the experiment with Neymar. Although the other thing that I would say is there's going to be a natural breaking point for this PSG attack in 1 year's time, because Lionel Messi, I don't think, will stay on for another year with PSG. I know there's an option in the contract, but I think this will be a two-year deal and out for Messi. And whether that means that they revamp the entire attack then, possibly, you know, we'll just have to wait and see. But I think so much depends on being able to thrash out a deal that is palatable for PSG. I don't think they'd loan somebody out like Neymar. So it's a question of finding a landing spot. They won't let him go on a free transfer. So you're probably looking at somebody prepared to pay at least the best part of 100 million euros. That's going to be very difficult to find. And I wonder if perhaps a good season, you know, of him, you know, getting down to it on the pitch, you know, could actually either give him hope of potentially staying on with PSG and achieving something in Paris, or at least make him more attractive to another club that perhaps wants to come in and take him off of PSG's hands when there is that natural breaking point with Messi, which will free up, you know, a lot of wage space if they want to, you know, go out there and try and bring in somebody younger, somebody French. That's another thing that Nasser El Khelaifi said. They're going to look closer to home for talents and try and build this kind of like homegrown project, given that, you know, how many talented players they have on their doorstep. So you've got them linked with Hugo Ekitike of Reims. And obviously Christopher Nkunku, who left PSG to go to RB Leipzig and has now completely blown up in the Bundesliga as well.
Yeah, well, there's going to be life after Neymar. Clearly, there's going to be life after Messi. Clearly, there's even going to be life after Kylian Mbappe. This is why I thought that, you know, the only reason why, and I know that, Mike, you said it earlier, why it would have been weird to see Zidane with PSG, but this is why I think he would have been great here. Because if there's somebody out there, if there's a manager out there that can control the egos, and I mean it for better or worse, of the superstars like Kylian Mbappe, Lionel Messi, and Neymar, the only one is Zinedine Zidane. He is the only bigger name in there that can demand something. And sometimes I feel, and it's because I watch Neymar with Chiche so much with Brazil, Neymar needs somebody to look up to. He needs somebody that can just, you know, mentor him like a child, because he still is that Santos kid that wants to have a good time. And to your point, Michael, obviously looking for the big buck, but he is closing in on Pele's record, and that's not a coincidence. He really does deliver when he has the right type of management. And that's why I thought maybe Zidane could be it. Regardless of all that, it'll be interesting to see what happens. Before we take a break, though, I do want to go, and I'll go to you first, Mike. Give me just your assessment of Mauricio Pochettino and his time at PSG, as he's obviously, you know, on his way out. I you know, he did win the cup double. He did win the league. He took PSG to the semifinals of the Champions League. I believe only Thomas Tuchel was the only one that could better that. Is that right?
LME, you could win the cup double.
Yeah, I was about to say.
hey, by the way, I think I could win the Champions League with PSG. It's one of those drunken conversations as well.
Yeah.
Mike, okay, so talking about Pochettino, based on what JJ just said, was it basically just a walk in the park for him and not good enough from the Argentinian manager at Paris Saint-Germain?
I think he had to deal with elements that previous managers have never had to deal with. Yes, superstars have been coming to PSG, but the arrival of both Lionel Messi and Sergio Ramos, I wonder at what point were players forced upon him. The Messi situation in particular, I think maybe the understanding was, hey, Messi's Argentinian, Pochettino's Argentinian, maybe there might be some mutual respect there. But I think it was just too much for him to handle, and rightfully so. A manager a la Zidane would be better equipped from his track record at Real Madrid, as you said before. But Poch ain't Zidane. Poch is still a good manager. You saw how they lined up against Real Madrid, and they were so close. They put a game and a half together where they looked like one of the best teams in Europe. And those are the moments that have gotten away from Poch. You saw it with him at Tottenham, where they were so close, and then something psychological happens with the team, with him, where it all just goes south. And I really hope that this won't be the defining chapter. We know that it's not going to be the defining chapter. I think leagues like La Liga might be in store for him.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, Michael. JJ, because I think about his Espanol days, actually. I think Pochettino is at his best when he has a team that's hungry. Mm-hmm. And a different type of hunger to PSG, right? Somebody like teams that want to prove to themselves, Espanyol, and that's why he went to Southampton and stuff. How would you assess his time at PSG? Somebody that covers this club inside and out.
Underwhelming. I agree with Mike. I do still think that there is a very good coach there. I just don't think in hindsight it was a very good fit with PSG at all. I think unfortunately Pochettino talked up such a strong game that when he arrived expectations were sky high, and a lot of everything that he talked up was basically blown away in the first 6 months, when I think people realized the penny dropped that for Pochettino returning to PSG actually wasn't this emotional homecoming that had been built up, even with his time as Spurs coach. And also there was very little effort to speak French. Obviously there was little left over from his time spent in France, where he was PSG captain. He also went and played for Bordeaux as well. So I think many people were feeling shortchanged that, and the fact that Pochettino, wasn't committed maybe enough to the project to want to actually move his family and his life, to the French capital. So it suggested that he was always targeting a short-term stay. Then there was the fact that it was PSG who took up the option to extend his contract, not him, sort of negotiating that extended stay with PSG. So it almost felt like a marriage of convenience at first, and then a marriage of inconvenience for the final season. I'd say that Pochettino should have achieved more in terms of trophies. But then again, when you look at the coaches that have come in since Laurent Blanc, you could make an argument that a lot of them have underwhelmed, with the exception of Thomas Tuchel, who got them over that hump, got them to the Champions League final, and had them, at least on paper, still dominating domestically.
Why is this, JJ? Why is this happening to PSG? Is it the pressure? Is that it? Is it the fact that this is one of the most, richest, wealthiest clubs in the world after Newcastle, of course, Man City, etc.? Is that it? Is it a lack of understanding French culture? What is it? And what is it? Is because Galtier coming in, because he knows French football so well, do they think that's going to be the answer? What's going on? Who can unlock this PSG talent?
I think a lot of it is down to just respect from the players, respect from the staff towards the domestic league. People can say what they want about PSG playing in Ligue 1 and Ligue 1 strengths, its weaknesses. At the end of the day, it's PSG's domestic league. Nothing is going to change that anytime soon. I mean, like, at least not for the better. Mm. I hope that we don't see the Super League happening anytime soon. But that's really the only thing that could change, the fact that PSG play the bulk of their matches in France and in Ligue 1. So there's no point sort of moaning about it. Instead, when people say to me, oh, PSG walk, the French league and the French cup every season, when was the last time, outside of COVID, that they actually won all of the domestic titles? It's quite a while ago now. So I think that PSG need to get back to being dominant domestically in the way that they were under Laurent Blanc, when they had guys like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Thiago Motta, Blaise Matuidi, Maxwell, Thiago Silva, guys that sort of regulated their own dressing room and, gave French football the kind of minimum level of respect it needs. Because at the end of the day, okay, a lot of them weren't there to be successful in France and in Ligue 1. They were all chasing the Champions League dream, but at least they took it seriously enough to ensure that PSG won absolutely everything every season, because they wanted to win. And that is the mentality that PSG are now trying to capture. Whether Galtier is the guy to bring that in or not, or to foster that, we'll have to wait and see. But the one thing that I will say about Galtier is he's one of the few people that Zlatan chose to respect from his time in French football, recognized a strong adversary when he saw him. And Zlatan also had massive respect for Laurent Blanc's assistant manager, Jean-Louis Gasset, who was basically the de facto coach for PSG the majority of the time, because Blanc was one of those managers who prefers to distance himself from his players. So there were very few people, Zoumana Kamara, who's now in PSG's youth setup, another one of them, who earned the respect of somebody from that different era of the game. And I think Galtier has the potential to possibly bring in that kind of chemistry, helped by the fact that Kylian Mbappe, who's PSG's star man, absolutely craves that level of seriousness for the project.
I think a lot of it comes down to the pressure on one trophy, the UEFA Champions League. And when you have so much pressure being eyed towards that trophy, it makes everything else obsolete. It's like when in life, when so many things are going well your way, but you have this ambition, this goal that trumps everything else, nothing is good enough. And if you're a manager and you're taking this job, you're coming in knowing that there's a target on your back. If you don't deliver in year one, that your job's in question. Well, that pressure then filters into uncertainty in that locker room. Now, if you shift the movement away from trying to buy up superstars, the Harlem Globetrotters of soccer, to achieve this Champions League trophy, and you start building a culture. When Zlatan was there, when this project started of revamping PSG into a European giant, you had a culture. Zlatan, you know, Thiago Silva, there were culture builders in that. Carlo Ancelotti built a culture that was a core. And, you know, they didn't turn the corner quite yet with that group, but that was more of a team. That was more, there's more of a togetherness in that group than there is in modern day PSG soccer. And I think until those things are addressed and some of the expectations are dwindled down into, you know, life-size things, then I think it's going to be just asking way too much for just about any manager.
I've got a quick question for you guys, and we know how much talent there is in that PSG team, and I think Mike has a very valid point, but if that kind of pressure and that expectation has trickled down to the players, obviously they've cracked at times in the Champions League. Now, as good as they are, does that mean you have to sweep the decks with basically anybody who's been associated long-term with that kind of failure? And I'm talking about the Marquinhoses, the Marco Verrattis of the team, guys who mentally, I've only really known PSG as this team that kind of chokes, on the biggest stage.
I would say no. There's Marquinhos I would keep because he's actually gotten better since the likes of a Thiago Silva has left. I mean, this guy is scoring goals, big goals for them in the Champions League. That run to the final, he was a pivotal figure. I know Neymar and Mbappe got a lot of plaudits, but he was the guy who was delivering behind the scenes, and he's now become the captain, and he's delivering for the Brazilian national team. I'm glad you mentioned Marco Verratti, because at what point do they move away from Marco Verratti? This PSG team, talk about culture setting with contracts. There's so many guys who are part of the old guard now, who keep getting their contracts extended, and they're bringing in new stars. So it's like you're building this molehill of just talented players. You got Wijnaldum, who doesn't look like a fit, but these guys are all on big money. Ander Herrera is still there somehow, doesn't play many games. And I think it's at what point do you move forward from saying, you know what, if we're going to move this project forward, we have to get rid of some of these players because it's just amassing talent and there's an overload of talent at this club.
Yeah, it's such a tough question because when I think of PSG, I almost can't even think about trying to make a comparison with any other club. When you try and change culture, it's a step-by-step process. But at the same time, it's almost like using players as an escape goat, because I don't think that's the issue. I think whether Marquinhos stays or goes is not the issue. Whether Verratti stays or goes is not the issue. The issue I feel is like somebody needs to come in and identify that as PSG's number one problem. And I don't think Pochettino did it, to your point, Jonathan Johnson, on how he came in. I don't think many managers before that could do it. Maybe Galtier can be the one because, you know, the respect that he commands. It's going to be an intriguing preseason, and you know they have the tools to do it. That's the frustrating thing, is just to see, can they essentially win the coveted trophy, which is the Champions League? But we will have to wait and see. We're going to take a break, by the way. When we come back, some more Ligue 1 discussion, including Lyon and the new acquisition, of course. And also, you know, it's not quite Liga anymore, but the story regarding Bordeaux and, you know, what that says about the financial situation regarding French football. Mike Lahoud, Jonathan Johnson will have some final thoughts. Diego Lasso, we'll be right back. The soccer calendar knows no breaks, so it's always all systems go here on Diego Lasso. Staying on top of the global game is an all-day gig. Then there's the added stress of being a helplessly loyal fan who obsesses over every minor detail concerning my club. Throwing on top of that the studio lights, the public speaking, the breaking news, it's a recipe for perspiration. But nah, not for yours truly. Fortunately for me, sweat and bad odors are two things I never have to worry about. Thanks to the long-lasting power of Gillette Clear Gel Antiperspirant, I can get on with my day, which mainly involves staying on top of the latest Aston Villa news and telling myself it's strictly for work purposes without breaking a sweat. Gillette Clear Gel Antiperspirant goes on with an anti-white mark formula and protects your nostrils from those nasty under-armpit smells while giving you 72-hour sweat protection. If you want all-day freshness, the choice is clear. Gillette Clear Gel Antiperspirant is a tap-in. Get your Gillette Clear Gel Antiperspirant at a store near you. Welcome back, everybody. Diego Lasso, Michael Lahoud, Jonathan Johnson, Leon. What a club. John Textor closing in on acquiring the French team, of course. What's the latest updates here, Jonathan Johnson?
Yeah, well, there was a press conference between Jean-Michel Aulas and Textor that went on earlier this week. Basically, the deal is now completely signed. Essentially, this is born out of the fact that 40% of the shares in Lyon, which is a publicly listed company, quite a rarity in France, you know, that's how Textor basically came to be interested in Lyon and how he came to the table. And now he's basically investing in Lyon. It will remain Olas's baby for at least the next few years. And the idea is that they together, you know, will turn Lyon into, you know, the force that it once was, and the club that's really most capable of putting sustained pressure on PSG in terms of the Ligue 1 title, you know, and ultimately make them the second force in French domestic football. Their summer started quite interestingly. Alexandre Lacazette has gone back home. There's rumours that Tolisso Umtiti might also be going back to Groupama Stadium, which would be quite refreshing because this is a club that has based most of its success on the phenomenal youth academy talents that come through the ranks there. So I think that, you know, in terms of identifying the right club to get involved in, Textor, you know, has done his homework. However, with somebody like Aulas, I really question how much kind of power and how much say anybody, you know, going into a situation like that will have when you're talking about the man who has basically built Lyon up from the ground over like three decades or something, you know, because Aulas, I mean, he is an institution in French football, he himself and then Lyon, the club as well.
Aulas has been there since 1987. I mean, that's a long time, except that geez, I'm not going to say that was the year after I was born. That's not cool.
That was the year I was born.
That's why we get along, JJ.
You two are so young. That's when my sister was born.
So, I mean, with so much transitioning, I mean, that's a massive transition. Talk about an institution that is Lyon. What is Olas's legacy after all this time?
You know what? I think it's easy to forget that Lyon were the dominant power in French football at the beginning of the 2000s. Seven straight domestic league titles. That's a pretty incredible run in the pre-PSG era. In fact, I don't think PSG have even managed that yet under the Qataris. That's how much of an achievement it was. People will point to that and say, oh, it's because it was Ligue 1. It was weak, but Ligue 1 was more balanced. I argue that it's more balanced than people give it credit for now, but it was even more balanced back then. There were a number of teams that could go toe-to-toe, and yet Lyon was so far you know, ahead of the pack for a lot of that time. They had some really iconic players, you know, guys like Sonny Anderson, guys like Janino Pernambucano. You know, the list is huge. And, you know, what Lyon did for French football at that time, you know, don't forget some of the classic Champions League encounters with Real Madrid. You know, it's really there. You know, they helped to put French football on the map at a time when some of the other bigger clubs were really struggling. You know, Marseille were in a bit of chaos despite being the only club to win the Champions League from France. PSG were nowhere near the club that they are today. Yeah. And giants like Saint-Étienne were messing around in the second tier for a while. So, you know, it is, I think, a bigger club than many people give it credit for.
All right. Well, let's move on to something that you were warning us about for a while, Jonathan Johnson, Bordeaux. And now, obviously, you know, due to their economical issues, they're no longer in Liga. What's the latest? And, you know, I think more importantly, what does this say about the health of the financial situation in French football?
Well, the funny thing is they're not in Ligue 1, but they're not in Ligue 2 either. Bordeaux basically have been administratively relegated to the third tier, which is the semi-professional levels in France. And there is essentially a hole of 22 million euros in the club. And if that is not filled between now and the beginning of July, Bordeaux will essentially cease to exist and almost restart in the same way that, you know, we've seen Parma, we've seen Fiorentina, we've seen Palermo over the years in Italy. You know, it's really sad when it happens to a French footballing institution, but, you know, the mismanagement over the years for Bordeaux, and, you know, it's a stagnation, let's be fair, that's set in as well before American investment. You know, it's basically been a very, very slow death, and dropping out of Ligue 1 has had the kind of catastrophic impact on the club in economic terms, but also in terms of prestige that you would have expected it to. It is a mess from top to bottom, and everybody is crossing their fingers that a group can be put together to somehow save it. You know, there is, you know, a lot that's being said of Gerard Lopez. You know, I think people can understand more now why he was moved on by Lille. You know, we've seen a very messy situation unfold in Belgium as well. But, you know, ultimately, at the end of the day, I don't think there's just one person that, you know, or one party that can have their fingers pointed at as with regards to who's responsible to this mess for Bordeaux. It's something that's happened now over the best part of 10 years. And, you know, we are at this moment in time talking about potentially the last couple of weeks in the club's existence before it's forced into a hard reset.
JJ, one of the things that I've kept my eyes on in French football, talk about institutions. We mentioned a club like Lyon, clubs that have been in the Champions League, Bordeaux, very iconic teams. You know, with the likes of Lyon and Bordeaux, the French TV rights deal, I'm going to guess that they're probably not anywhere in the stratosphere of Premier League. I mean, no one really is. La Liga, Serie A, Bundesliga. From your vantage point, what needs to change in Ligue 1 to ensure that things like this don't start happening with iconic football clubs? We've seen Lyon get, you know, a new investor. Is it American investors coming in? Is it foreign investors? You know, what really needs to change so to just stop a potential pandemic?
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good question. Obviously, COVID and France taking the decision to prematurely end that season didn't help. And that created the crisis in terms of the TV deal with MediaPro, you know, basically defaulting on a deal that was supposed to get French football into the same stratosphere as, you know, the other top five European leagues. Now, it's taken a long time to get to this point. You know, Amazon have taken things on to fill the void domestically, but there is now a project in place between now for it. So over the next 2 years, which will see CVC in terms of a similar deal to what we've seen with them in La Liga, where they will basically acquire a low percentage of what's known as like a commercial vehicle. So the commercial, you know, group that holds the rights to French professional football, they will acquire that for a sum. That money will be split between all of the clubs so that they can focus on, you know, stadium renovations, you know, infrastructure, stuff that will serve to strengthen the game domestically moving forward. There's been reforms in terms of youth contracts. Clubs are no longer tied to three-year deals. They can offer up to five now. And the hope is that with somebody like Mbappe staying on as well, and the league having shown that it is competitive, competitive in recent years, with Lille being champions, with Monaco as well back in 2017. You know, that it is a league that's worth investing in. And the hope is that there will be a new international TV deal at some point in the next couple of years that will finally help, you know, when it's allied with the domestic deal, you know, to actually put Ligue 1 in a position where they can compete with some of those top five leagues. It's a long way away from the Premier League and La Liga. It probably won't even get close for the next decade or so. But the idea is at least to get closer to the likes of Serie A and the Bundesliga, who they are still dwarfed by at this moment in time.
Oh, espérons une Ligue 1, hein? Let's hope for a good Ligue 1. C'est seulement que je parlais le français. Qu'est-ce que tu penses alors? Come on now. High school French, baby. Let's go. Well, listen, this
has been... Très bien.
Très bien, si, merci beaucoup. All right, listen, this has been a fantastic episode. Michael Lahoud and Jonathan Johnson, with all his knowledge of Ligue 1, it's great to represent the French League at the very least for this episode as we look ahead to the rest of the summer. And we finish it. Our producer just wrote, yeah, 3 ans. He just said, I'm 13 years old. That's the only thing that he knows. Well done, Desnar, as your French is getting better. Let's finish with final thoughts, everybody. Michael Lahoud, let's finish with final thoughts from yours. What do you have for us?
No, final thoughts for me. I'm going outside of the realm of PSG as we're talking about league. I'm excited for the Marseilles of the world. I'm excited for some of these teams that are in European positions, because I really think that that's where you talk about Ligue 1 getting that respect back, getting back in the conversations with some of the top leagues. I really think one of those teams winning a European trophy is much needed. And Marseille, very disappointing that they fell short in the Conference League. I thought they were going to go ahead and win it. Yeah. So I'm excited to see who is that team that's going to just turn the tide outside of PSG for this league.
Yeah, great shout, Michael Lahoud. What was your final thoughts, Jonathan Johnson?
Well, I'll add on Mike's thoughts, and I agree. I think that a strong OM is really important for French football, and fingers crossed they can have the kind of European campaign that you know, does service to their history and what they've contributed.
They'll have
French
to do it without Boubacar Kamara, Jonathan Johnson.
They will. He's going to leave a big hole in that team. But it's not just about Marseille. You know, it'd be nice to see Lille get themselves back in contention after a very disappointing title defense. But then you've got the likes of Monaco, who came on very strong last season. I'm keen to see what they can do under a full season of Philippe Clément. Then you've got Rennes, who look extremely good under Bruno Genesio, and I'm keen to see what they can do. And also Nice. I mean, the feeling is that Lucien Favre is going to come back for a second bite at the cherry. He did well the first time around. Let's not forget that he led them to I think it was third place off the top of my head a few years ago. Favre has this funny habit of going back to some of his former clubs and doing like two spells in each place. He's a bit like Paul Pogba, but I think those are the kind of guys that you need to keep an eye on, and fingers crossed they can go from strength to strength, because like Mike said, you know, it is important that Ligue 1 is not just sort of known as the PSG league, and if PSG can be given you know, more of a tough time of it in the next couple of years, then all the better you know, for the French domestic game, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. My only final thought is I'm excited to see these promoted teams, Toulouse coming back and Auxerre after a 10-year absence as well. And AC, Ajaccio? Is that how you say it? The
Ajaccio.
Bears.
Ajaccio, yeah.
Ajaccio returned to the summit of French football after an 8-year absence. So these teams haven't been in Ligue 1 for a while. So they're coming back to it. That's going to be exciting, JJ. You excited for those promoted teams? That's cool.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, honestly, there's not much in French football that I don't get excited about. Obviously, it's a real tragedy to lose Bordeaux and Saint-Étienne, but having a team like Auxerre back, you know, they were a staple when I was growing up and getting to know French football. So, you know, having them and their fans back in the top flight is fantastic, especially the dramatic way that they sealed promotion. Toulouse as well, I've got a lot of time for the project that's being put into place there. You know, they're doing wonderful things with data and, you know, not on a massive budget either. So, you know, fingers crossed that they can impress again this season. And Ajaccio, you guys know how much I love my annual holiday in Corsica. So having Ajaccio in Ligue 1 is fantastic. You know, and if Bastia can have a strong season in Ligue 2, who knows? Maybe we'll have the Corsican derby in Ligue 1 at some point in the near future.
That'd be amazing. I got to go and take a trip there as well. And by the way, whatever you may think of the situation, Kylian Mbappé staying in Ligue 1 is massive for French football. It really helps them a lot. So we will see. All right. Well, that's the end of our episode. Fantastic sub, John _ Legosso. Make sure to read all his content, of course, on CBS Sports. And Mike Lahoud, at Mike Lahoud as well, a contributor to not just here, but Austin FC as well. How's Austin FC doing these days, Mike? Are they doing
it? They're doing pretty well. Got a big matchup against FC Dallas, though. First Texas derby between those two. And Dallas, they've got, Juan Jesus Ferreira, who's pumping in goals left and right. So it should be a good battle.
Is that the name they're giving to it? The Texas derby? There's not something the Raging Cajun derby or something like
that? No, there really isn't a name yet. For Austin in general, unless Austin brands it something, it ain't something yet. That's definitely the vibe that the team is playing with right now. If we didn't come up with it, it ain't something. No, on the field itself, you know, it's really going to be the battle between two potential MVP caliber candidates. Sebastian Driussi, who, if you remember, won Zenit St. Petersburg, LME, I'm sure you remember him from River Plate. This guy is a baller.
Yeah,
26 years of age. Yeah. Leading the team and one of the leaders of the league, and Jesus Ferreira, U.S. men's national team, the really search for a number nine looks like it may have been answered. So this has so many implications and really a defining sort of game for both teams.
I love it. I love it. My local bodega guy, this guy, he was wearing an Austin FC shirt a few days ago. Ooh. And I was like, hey, man, Austin FC, what's up with that? And he was like, I just like green, man. He's just like the green.
He's with the verde and black. Hey, tell him to hit me up. We'll get him some more swag.
I love it. A Puerto Rican from Spanish Harlem wearing an Austin FC shirt. There you have it. But anyway, Jonathan Johnson, John _ Like Gossip, Mike Lahoud, LME, thank you so much. Hey, we're getting so close to 13,000 subscribers on our YouTube channel. We got plenty to come, including World Cup content and so much more. Transfer stories with Fabrizio Romano. Keep on watching. Keep on sharing. Thank you so much. Have a great rest of your week. We'll see you next time. Till then.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.